I think it's great that you focused on yoga citta vritti nirodha, because it just shows essentially what this chapter said is very much the way we often approach yoga, which is what's called shankhya, which is why do you need it? Why do you want it? And the yoga is how do you get it? And the Vedanta is what you'll experience once you do get it. So it talks about all the molecules that are turned every way in the magnet, and how incarnations of these vrittis are countless. He calls them countless vrittis, are turned every which way, taking our energy. Where we want to go up with our energy, it's going around and out, and I want this and I want that, and I'm afraid of this and I'm afraid of that, and all these vritti patterns and samskars that are in our astral bodies, in our spines, are taking our energy, and we need to focus it all up here. So how do you do that? And Swami used a good example. He said, you know, before I came to Yogananda and had a real path and techniques of yoga to do, I was trying to change myself for the better. But he said, I found that it was a lot like taking a light cotton or silk shirt in the sink and trying to totally immerse it in the water. He said, and I would, you know, try and clean it that way, and I would push down on this, and then another part would pop up. And I'd push down on this, and another part would pop up. The air would get under it. Just, you couldn't get the whole thing just totally in the water, immersed in the water. He said, and I found that's a lot like the psychological technique for getting rid of the chinks that we have, the habit patterns, the psychology that we want to change, all the things we want to change about ourselves. You know, psychiatry is today's Western materialistic, mostly materialistic religion of how do you change yourself. But, you know, it's going to take so long. I had a friend who was a very good, I was in Washington, D.C. before Ananda, and this person was a top psychiatrist. He was an elder man at that point. He was in his 60s, so he'd been practicing a long time. And he was having a fine life. He was a happy man. He just looked so joy-filled. And, you know, I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, the psychiatry stuff, it was kind of interesting. What do your patients do? You know, what do they do? Well, they come to me, he says. I have a lot of patients. They come to me. And they keep coming to me, and, you know, they talk about their problems, and I listen, and, you know, we talk about this and that. And I said, oh, and do they get cured? And they go away. He said, well, you know, I have one who's come to me for 10 years. I thought, 10 years of talking about my problems, let me out of here. I did not sign up for session number one with that guy, because I thought, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, and how long is... Is that person still going to a psychiatrist? I don't know. But, you know, we try and find ways to change ourselves. And here it is, right to the point. We know we need to change ourselves. It's obvious. We want to be happier. We want to be want the goodies that they're talking about. This is reminding myself today, as we were talking about something, some duality in the world. I said, you know, it's so nice to have yoga that teaches us about bliss, which Swami Kriyananda said is the one state of consciousness without a dual. There is no duality in bliss. There's no getting up with a good experience and dropping low when it changes. There's no feeling low because it's not good and then popping up when it is good. There's no duality in bliss. It's just this expanding joy with no downside, with no threat, with no fear. It's just complete in itself. So we have this that the gurus come and tell us, come to bliss, that's what you all want. And we go, yeah, so how do we get there with all of our little things? And, you know, obviously going to that particular psychiatrist certainly was not going to be the answer. What is the answer? And here it is, the spine. We've got the spine, and it's carrying all those things that you may want to lay on a psychiatrist's table and talk about. I also realized as I got more into the spiritual life, okay, psychiatry's not for me. I don't want to talk about my mother and father for 10 years. You know, thank you very much, or whatever else you want to talk about. I don't really want to go.
You don't have to be a psychiatrist.
No. I can be pretty hard on psychiatrists. I do have to apologize. And a lot of them do great work. They do use the healing of love and of care, and a lot of people can awaken to their higher states by having someone carefully love them as a way of healing that psychiatrists can do if they're really just good people. But
You're poking fun at Freudian psychology.
Freudian psychology practiced by a person who's just scientific in it and not, using their heart and intuition as much. But anyway, that's my way of saying it's okay if you're a psychiatrist. I'm not going to be against all psychiatrists. But then I thought, okay, fine. So now there's a soul, and it's lived all these lives. This was early on. I came to California, and I was studying about spiritual life and yoga and just different things, anything I could find about the spiritual life, self-actualization and, how do you change yourself? How do you become transformed into this being that I knew I wanted to be? And then I learned, oh, there's all these lives. And I thought, oh, good, well, I'll just learn about my past lives then. And that'll help me sort it all out. I know who I was and what I need to work on. And that seems like a logical thing, reasonable. So, I thought, so I went and did a little thing about finding out a past life or two. Well, I realized it could take me as many lives to remember my past lives almost as it took to live them. And I didn't want it to take that long. I don't want to. It was kind of like a soap opera, where you get hooked on it, and there's like who's doing what are they doing next week and then next week. And I saw some friends that were going that track with their past lives. They wanted to really know as much as they could about all their past lives. And I thank goodness was safe from that because I could still be there, in life number 300. I could still be going back, and I wouldn't have found yoga and I wouldn't have found Kriya. And then Yogananda says, okay, you want to get there? You want to get there fast? Work directly with the energy patterns in the spine. Work directly with getting that energy. And if you get that energy up, all these little vortices of energy described it really well, like imagine a river that, it's been in a drought and it's really low and it's just quiet and, it's not flowing very much at all. And along the side, there's, weeds and dead leaves and things that have sort of just hung around there. They're just, old stuff. And then the big rains come and the river rises and the rains from the mountains come and the force gets bigger and it starts making the river rise and it starts having quite a velocity. So you put something in the river and it flows really fast. And as the river flows, all these little things that are stuck around the side.
Vortices
and whirlpools that were happening when it was just a small river, their power isn't enough to hold it. So they go with it. All that stuff goes with it. And I love that image because that's what Kriya does. It gets a big, like a fire hose of energy that just washes those little, vrittis. So that's, why we want it, we know. How we get it is yoga. And in this it says a really good statement. We think of, by now you've had classes and techniques and pranayamas, attitudes, and hung sa, and om, and postures and energization. You've had a lot of a variety of things that are the yogic path that Yogananda brings. And here it's really interesting how he says, but there's one technique that really is the point, and that's Kriya, where you can actively use that energy. Everything else is like a little bit of a side thing, helpful and necessary to prepare the nervous system to receive the blessings and the bigger energy that's going to come. If you have a flood coming and you have a little tiny river area that hasn't been cleaned out at all and it hasn't been a gradual movement of energy to, you can have a big problem with that flood of energy. And in the body, the nervous system can be set a little out of balance. Some people say, why can't I get Kriya the first week I come? I mean, this is what Yogananda gave. Well, Yogananda said, let's prepare your body and your nervous system first by learning all these things, practicing these things.
Purifying,
getting your meditation up and letting that energy start flowing in there. And then when you get Kriya, you'll be able to have balance and integrate it in your life, in your practice, and in your body, in your nervous system. So I thought that was an interesting point. Just all the other things are sideshows, side parts of coming to, you know, what is before you. And we didn't reread, and maybe as homework we could, that chapter in the autobiography of a yogi on Kriya Yoga. Before you take your Kriya, you might want to read that chapter again. It's so full of the promise of it. Why do it?
Did you guys really emphasize it in Tanya's class?
Yeah, Tanya, you probably did already, yeah. It's miraculous. It's the divine gift from God. The time of knowing God has come, as it says, because you can make fast physical progress. You can experience the eight aspects of God, and as the energy, you know, builds more and more and more, you know, we will know God. We will attain self-realization, and there's nothing else that's being done that's as powerful on the planet as this Kriya from this line of masters. Other masters have it too, and if there's a self-realized master, someone can become self-realized, so that's true of all paths. But here we are, we've been given this, and it's come to us in a way that we can receive it, because we feel attracted and natural with the way it's being presented to us, and the readings and how Yogananda talked about it, how Kriyananda talked about it, and we get to read the applications, and many people will say, I recognize there's joy, I feel comfortable here, it feels like my home. You know, at Ananda Village, often people come for the first time on some yoga retreat, they have no idea what they're coming into, they haven't read the autobiography, they just want to relax, or, you know, have a getaway for the weekend in the mountains, and their soul just relates and says, oh, this is what I've been looking for. This, I feel at home here. Finally, I feel at home. And there's a vibration here that those of us who are called, it does. It feels like home. There was one other part of the reading in addition to the Yogas Chitva Vritti Nirodha, which I really enjoyed. For me, I, for some reason, have not had an easy time remembering the difference between mon, buddhi, chitva,
and
ahankara. And it was so helpful.
Mon is the Bengali way of saying manas.
Mon. And it was so helpful when he had that discussion with the elders, and they wanted to talk about the philosophy of yoga, and he knew they were ready to defend. They were kind of egoic, and they were wanting to show off what they knew. And he said, let's cut to the chase here. Okay, we're just going to talk about what we've all experienced. Now, can you tell me where is mon, where is jitwa, where is ahankara? And they couldn't do it. He said, well, mon is the ma, is at the top of the head. Mun is mind. Buddhi is the intellect, which is focused here. Buddhi. And I thought, oh, that's fun to think of a little Buddha there. You often see that in Kuan Yin. There's a little picture of Buddha there. Anyway, the intellect. Medulla oblongata is the ahankara, the
ego
center. And chitwa is the feelings in the heart, the energy moving through the heart and feeling. And then that story he gave, which I really love, it's so clarifying. It's not bad to live in the world. It's not bad to appreciate things. But what happens to us? And that story of the horse. You're going along through life, and you look over, and oh, there's a horse.
Sorry.
That's
that wasn't an attempt to be the horse.
There's a horse. And so you notice the horse, and that's the mind.
Mun.
Okay, notice, observe, horse. Then
I'm not going to be able to help you on this, so I hope you know how to do it.
What was the second part?
My horse
is the ego, And I don't remember what the intellect part of the horse is.
This is just perceiving. This is naming.
Okay, so this is a something, I guess, perceiving. This is saying, that's a horse. Okay.
Identifying.
So you use your identify, use your mind to say, what's that word? Okay, so that's horse. Oh, it's my horse. Now the ego gets involved. And then, so that starts it. And then, he said, what really happens that makes us become attached and gets us into delusion and trouble is, I like my horse. You know, also, I want my horse. You can't have my horse. You know, I hold my horse. You know, all of that starts happening. And it's so clarifying. I love that story because, you know, you're shopping and you go around. Oh, that's nice. I love you. That's nice. That's pretty. You know, that's beautiful. That's blue. That's green. And then, I like that. I want that. And it can be fine. It can be fun. But I really want that. I really need that. I really must have that. And then life after life, we develop these patterns that just hold that energy around whatever it is, the horse, the car, the person, the marriage, the relation, you know, whatever it is. You identify with it through the like and the dislike. You identify with it through the ego. But even with the ego, it's like being a householder yogi. Okay, I have a house. I have to take care of it.
I'm responsible for it.
I'm responsible. I'm a steward. I have children. I have to take care of them. That's what I've chosen to do. It's my duty. I do it. That's fine. I need a car. It needs to be fixed. You know, pleasant. It's, you know, I like. It's good to have a car. But we get more. It's my child. You know, the child has to do what I want. Then we get really caught.
They didn't do what I wanted.
They didn't do what I wanted. I'm disappointed. Or my wife, you know, I wanted this kind of wife, and she's that kind of wife, and I'm, you know. So that's where we get caught up, is in those feelings. So that neutralization of the whirlpools of feeling. What a blessing to know that it's possible to do that. And that's when we have all those, especially preparatory and into Kriya, which works actively, but, you know, relaxing, that's what really relaxing is. Those vortices that are spinning with the thoughts, keeping them going, we get to relax, go peaceful, watch the breathing, calm the waves in the heart so that the heart becomes more still. The mind follows with the breath becoming still, the thoughts become more still. Then we're back to neutral. And once we're back to neutral, the progress we made with our Kriya doesn't have all these other things taking it away. So, you
know. And then the 50% can come in.
And then the 50% can come in, where we're open to God's grace. And, you know, as you mentioned, the miracles of resurrecting someone from death, these outward forms, as Yogananda said in the beginning of the book, he said, unless you have signs and wonders, people won't believe. He quoted that saying from Christ in the Bible. He starts the AY with that because he talks a lot about miracles. And you know, why does he talk about miracles? And people who don't understand him, people from India, other places, say, what was he doing boasting about all those miracles? A true spiritual person never boasts, and it's true, they don't. He did it because people need to know it's true.
He also said a number of times, I only tell you these things when Divine Mother asks me to.
Yeah, and he only does those things when Divine Mother asks him to. So he's not doing miracles because it's fun for him to have his way, you know.
Or to show off.
Or even because he wants it, because it's his disciple and he loves them. He only would do things when God said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to heal that person. I want you to, you know, show this way of yogic power. I want you to do this. And so he was a servant of God completely without any ego. He said he had killed Yogananda long ago. No one lived in his body but God. So he was just an open window for God to do what God wanted to do in the world through him. So, but if he can do those miracles, it helps us look at that and say, I may have doubts in myself or that my karma can be overcome or that, but look, this person, they did things that nobody else I know has done. and maybe they can do this for me too. They can help me become free because they are powerful. They talked a little bit about power being important in a spiritual teacher or saint, as well as love, and that love has a power. And sometimes they correct us with that love and that power, but they can heal us. You know, I love that neutralization. Niruddha also means healing. I've never heard that before. I haven't studied Sanskrit myself or Hindi. So, yeah, the guru will help us neutralize, and with that neutrality, we can vote completely with all our energy in one direction. And that's how we become anchored in that bliss beyond a dual.
Love it.